Welcome back to Cloak and Dagger. I'm your host, Lenny Bloom. Once again, we're here to scrape the bullshit off the truth and to expose the state secrets, the ruling elite. Hope you don't learn. Joining me on the line right now is my co-host, Stefan Grossman. Dr. Grossman, coming to us from Germany on this wonderful internet line. Welcome back, Stefan, to Cloak and Dagger.
Well, hi, Lenny. Hi, everybody. Happy to be back. Been alive here.
Good.
And looks like we'll have interesting subjects to talk about today.
Yeah, terrific. Go ahead and introduce our wonderful guest who's returning after his on-the-ground research.
Yep, because on the line we have the eminent historian in New Zealand, Greg Hallett, author of Hitler Was a British Agent, and other books exposing the connections here in Europe. And Greg, you have a new... Hi, Greg.
Yeah, g'day from down under. We've got a new title, New Zealand, A Blackmailer's Guide.
Well, that's an exciting... Welcome. Nice to talk to you again. And you have that new book out, which is raising quite a commotion in your country, New Zealand.
Yeah, it's downgraded the New Zealand media, the judiciary and parliament as being agents that are not working for the people at all, but are essentially working to keep pedophiles and sexual deviants in positions of power so they can still act their children. New Zealand is essentially a pedophile movement fronting as a country, and our leading politicians are all pedophiles or married to pedophiles.
Stefan, let me just ask him. So basically, we were always told long ago that the British treated Australia as a prison. The whole continent was just a penal colony from the British standpoint. So basically, they haven't changed their attitude or mental stance too much in about 200 years. Is that would be consistent with what you're saying, Greg?
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Like, we had the Maori Wars here between the British and the Maori in the 1860s, and New Zealanders were still paying a tax to the Crown for Britain funding those wars, and that ended only very recently. So it was the same situation as the Americans paying tax to the British Crown for the American Civil Wars and Revolutionary Wars.
So it's consistent then that if the British aristocracy thought of a huge, huge continent like Australia as a prison, to extend their minds to New Zealand, which is a far smaller landmass than Australia, to think of it as nothing more than a boys' town or a pedophile camp, certainly should be understandable by people who, if they start to realize how the British aristocracy and monarchy considered Australian, and they haven't changed their viewpoint in hundreds of years.
Yeah, that's true. Pedophilia is still a major means of controlling societies from the British Crown, and the British Crown has a consistent tendency to elevate pedophiles into knighthoods. And by and large, knighthoods are made up of pedophiles, file thieves, and murderers. And occasionally they throw in a mountain climber just to give it a good status.
Now, if you go to the picture we have of the Order of the Garter on cloakanddagger.de, scroll down near the bottom of the page, you'll see the picture of the Order of the Garter with the Queen and the Duke, the princes, all the other lackeys like Cat Carrington. And they've got all these little boys at the end of each row. The Order of Garter and the little boys, and it's all right there in the picture, isn't it?
Yeah, that's basically how it's made up. I mean, those little boys are elevated right through their lives and they're never challenged, and if they get into file theft, pedophilia, or some government contract killing, then they too will be elevated to a knighthood.
Go ahead, Stefan.
Knighthood is a form of cover. It's a form of diplomatic immunity, and it stops people from being charged. They get away with the most horrendous crimes.
Well, let's mention your new book, Greg. The title is New Zealand Blackmail. And I'm quoting from the New Zealand Sunday Star Times. Is that the title, New Zealand Blackmail?
It's actually New Zealand, a blackmailer's guide. So I put in a huge ad, which was a bit of a media coup. I got a huge ad in on Sunday, which was yesterday, about a 8-inch by 5-inch ad advertising the book. And it talks about the sexual indiscretions of our Prime Minister and our Speaker of the House and their training in Tavistock, St. Petersburg from 1968.
Mm-hmm. Here in this newspaper clipping from the Sunday Star Times.
Hold on, you're stepping on each other. Greg, just what...
Go, Stefan.
Yeah, guys, listen, I think we should tell the listener that, you know, the stuff that Stefan and... what I want to say is the stuff that Stefan and Greg have put out is... really material which is banned by the establishment for obvious reasons, because these are state secrets in effect, behind the scenes machinations backstage in the global theater. And much of Greg, of course, your material is what I would call shop talk from plot headquarters. And therefore the plot headquarters chiefs, the ruling elite, and they do not want the material that you have to have to show and to expose. They don't want that exposed. So they go to all ends. They're not going to put you on the major networks that they own. They're not going to get Larry King. You should be on Larry King with your book, but you're not. And you're not because the ruling elite don't want exposed how they operate backstage in plot headquarters. And we're therefore using the internet as a medium, and of course it's rudimentary. We don't have a great setup. We don't have a big mixing board. It's difficult to get the sound right, but that's because we're blocked. Even if we had expensive material, they'd block your signal. So you get the signal out, and we've had problems with Greg, with you, of course. The lines have been busy. The lines are crossed. It's been over the last year or more that we've been interviewing you. There's always been sound problems, and you've had your lines. It's not easy. They're playing with your lines. But the thing is this, this is great for getting the message out, and we're looking forward to, and thank you for coming on. And we want you to continue. Let's try and play more simplex than duplex. I don't want us to step on each other. Maybe we'll have to say over when we're finished, but let's go ahead and try and keep it going back and forth and not step on each other. It's I'm sure there's a delay in the satellite and stuff, so I'm going to finish off and let Stefan have the floor over. Stefan, are you there? Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I got you now. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, we're here to interview Greg, of course, for writing this book. And I just want to have a little bit of a summary here, and I'll take it from the newspaper clipping. The clipping has three or four sentences I'd just like to mention. It talks about Greg's book, A New Zealand Blackmailer's Guide. And the book cites, the newspaper says, the book cites one high-ranking politician as having to wear nappies permanently thanks to a certain deviant practice, and a media superstar is named as a drug dealer. Also, Hallett's oeuvre includes such gems as Chief Justice Dame Sion Elias being a contract killer, Helen Clark, that's the Prime Minister of New Zealand, being a KGB agent, and Police Minister Annette King gifting 10 kilograms of cocaine to the police for them to distribute among the gangs. Greg, that's juicy stuff. Tell us, how have the New Zealanders reacted to that? Over.
Those that have bought the book, like someone bought the book And then 3 weeks later, they returned it to get another copy. And it was the most dog-eared book I've ever seen. So many people had read it, and they sit down and they read it, and they can't give it up, and then they hand it over to the next person. So it's gone around and been read 10 times in 3 weeks. And Alan Clark was aware, or actually when I first published How to Take Over the World in January 2007, it mentioned Helen Clark's indiscretions and her biographer being a pedophile, bisexual and a pedophile, and Helen Clark being trained by the KGB in St. Petersburg. And then she introduced something called the Electoral Finance Bill, which was actually American-style judicial fascism, which is designed to stop anyone speaking out and saying anything derogatory against any incumbent politician in the current Labor government. So everyone got really scared, and there were marches down Queen Street and marches down the main streets of all the major cities of New Zealand. And I attended a march on the 1st of December 2007, and I made my sign twice as big as everyone else's and stuck it on a painter's pole so I could extend it. So it was twice as high as everyone else's, and my one said plainly, "Let me speak," on both sides. And when I, on the way down Queen Street, about three different SIS, which is Security Intelligence Service, and three different IA, which is Internal Affairs Agents, came up and spoke to me. And we were trading stories on the way down, and I'd tell them a story, and they go, "Yeah, we know that." Another story, "Yeah, we know that." A third story, and go, "Oh, we didn't know that." And then I got down the bottom, and there was a photographer there who's probably either SIS or Internal Affairs. So he was photographing me, and I told him I was going to pull a stunt. So there were speeches at the bottom of Queen Street by various media political figures. And then I uncovered the real sign, which said, "Helen Clark wears incontinence nappies, yet another reason for the Electoral Finance Bill." And along with that, I had a photo of a book, New Zealand, A Blackmailer's Guide, and had fulfilled all of the new requirements under the Electoral Finance Bill, which is to name the third party who was funding the sign and their address and where they could be contacted. And then I handed out my business cards to the SIS and Internal Affairs. Now, from the 1st of January, supposedly exposing the Prime Minister Helen Clark as wearing incontinence nappies is illegal. However, we've just got a letter from the Minister of Police who says that it's not illegal. So at the moment, the New Zealand police do not know what the law is in New Zealand. So it is total chaos legally in New Zealand. And officially, the police do not know where I live. So if any of the MPs ask where I live, they just go no. And the SIS, Security Intelligence Service, has started to recognise that what I've been saying over the last, when I first published in 2002, so over the last 6 or 7 years, is actually true. So Helen Clark is the Minister of the SIS, but the SIS recognise now that she is a KGB agent, that she is a double agent Prime Minister, that she is a lesbian, and she does wear incontinence nappies as a result of sexual indiscretions at the White House. The SIS are totally at odds in what to do about it. So we've actually been turning intelligence agencies in New Zealand.
Greg, it reminds me. Greg, it reminds me of the June 1989 Washington Times story about the Washington D.C. police. We're running a pedophile sting operation. And what happened was all roads led to the White House.
Yeah.
And, of course, Bush had to get 3,000 CIA FBI guys on the streets of D.C. and gather up those copies from that June 29th, 89 story. And the Washington Times covered their ass by putting a visa slip on the front page of the Washington Times. So that satisfied their lawyers, because I'm sure they would have had to run the story past the lawyers, and the lawyers would say, "Go ahead, but you better put the slip there, then you're protected." So things are really... go ahead, over.
Okay. When I ran the latest ad for New Zealand, a blackmailer's guide, 300 pages, $45, FNZ Inc., PO Box 10964, Newmarket, Auckland. It had to go down to all of the heads of the editors in Wellington, and they said that they would only accept the ad if I put my name on it. So I put the name and my mobile phone number on it to make it extremely obvious that I was writing a book on how to blackmail, all the information you would need to blackmail New Zealand political figures, New Zealand judicial figures, and New Zealand media figures. And essentially in publishing it, I've removed the ability for them to be blackmailed because now everyone knows. Over.
Well, that sounds like a big step ahead, Greg.
Yeah, it's huge. It's huge. People don't know it, realize, you know, just how big it is. But I've also named Prime Minister Helen Clark and the Speaker of the House, Margaret Wilson, as former Tavistock St. Petersburg prostitutes. Over.
Well, that's a good one. Tavistock, that's, they have this course in how to deconstruct personalities. And there's an American historian, a very, very brilliant fellow, Alfred W. McCoy. He's written a thick book about the role of the CIA in the global drug smuggling industry. The CIA is very prominent, obviously, just like the British Empire was. The British Empire is acknowledged by its historians to be basically a drug and opium empire. That's being continued by the Nazi CIA. And the most recent book of Alfred W. McCoy discusses how the CIA spent $13 billion since 1950 in order to develop modern psychological torture methods. He calls these methods of no-touch torture, that is, psychological types of torture, Tavistock style. And it seems to me that now these methods are used. This is what you call the training of a person, of Helen Clark, Tavistock method. And these persons are put in key positions in order to use these methods of psychological deconstruction, of no-touch torture, against an entire society. That is, how to torture a society. And in other discussions, rightfully, you have called New Zealand something like a test tube for the entire New World Order program. And now you're adding many, many graphic details, things that people can put hands on, things with handles. And I would like to compliment you for that.
Thank you. Maybe I should talk a little bit about the use of government dealing in heroin and why they do it and the cover stories that they do it for. We had a situation in New Zealand where the former Speaker of the House, he was then the Speaker of the House, Jonathan Hunt, had been exposed by the American government department as a pedophile. I think it was by...
hope the line holds up here.
By the FBI or ONI. I've got it written in one of the books. So they needed to create this massive cover for the Speaker of the House's pedophilia. So Helen Clark got one of the government departments, I think it was CIFS, Child, Youth and Family Services, to send to the police a whole lot of adult porn images. And embedded in that adult porn images was sex with children images and videos. And we've got 9,000 police in New Zealand, and it was close to 3,000 police who were spending their days looking at these adult and child porn videos. And this came out to the public in November 2005. And there was a massive investigation and an even bigger cover-up. And then they said that it was around 300 police that were involved. And during that time, the police were so involved in looking at porn on their computer that when there was an accident or a crisis situation, the police would actually drive in the opposite direction to the accident. And the police were employing drivers to drive their cars around to use up the petrol bills. And in one of those times, a woman called Irene Arasha died or was murdered. And rather than the police turning up, they actually sent a taxi, and they sent a taxi to the wrong suburb. So the police were in complete, utter, and total breakdown mode. And then, in order to compromise the police further, they had the police trafficking heroin. In the newspapers, it was written up as cocaine, but it was 10 kilograms of heroin. They had the police trafficking heroin through the gangs. Now, I got the skinny on this. I got the inside on this, and I wrote up the whole thing as a prediction as to when the police would deliver it to the gangs, and about half a dozen other predictions. And I took it down to the local newspaper, the Sunday Star Times, to a woman called Donna Chisholm, and she did not publish it, but it all came true. Now, what happened with the Afghan war is that Afghanistan produces an enormous amount of heroin, and essentially, effectively, America took over the heroin trade from Russia, and 98% of the heroin that gets into Britain comes from Afghanistan. Now, the Secretary General of NATO, Jaap de Hoek Scheffer, came down to Australia and to New Zealand to formally sign up Australia and New Zealand as members of NATO, and at the same time, he gave Helen Clark 10 kilograms of Afghan heroin. And she then asked her closest cabinet ministers who wanted to traffic the heroin, and the Minister of Health, Annette King, who's a former dental nurse, put up a hand and said she would do it because her daughter and daughter's boyfriend were involved in drugs and drug dealing. So Annette King trafficked it to the police via Greg O'Connor, who's the president of the New Zealand Police Association, and then he trafficked to the gangs, and the gang members who refused to get involved in this new drug then had drugs planted on them and were charged. And that was all a cover to compromise the police so that they would not out Jonathan Hunt, Speaker of the House, as a pedophile. And then Jonathan Hunt was promoted to New Zealand's High Commissioner to Britain. And in 2006, the international pedophile movement was exposed. And it all led back to Jonathan Hunt and his long-term pedophile partner, Saron Briley. And Jonathan Hunt just put up his hands and claimed diplomatic immunity. And Saron Briley got off because he controls the retirement fund for the SAS. And that's how the whole thing went down. Over.
That's called creating unclean hands. You make sure everybody is in the loop and everybody is on the take. It's about money. How much money do you estimate was this 10 kilograms of what was it, heroin?
Yeah, actually, I've got no idea. I've got no idea, but I know that it was handed out for free. It was handed out in order to create a market. And then the baby boomers were considered a big market for heroin because it was their drug when they were sort of in their 20s. So what they did is they bought in an MI6 asset, baby boomer rock star by the name of Peter Franklin, and he was interviewed in full coded language on the 11th of May 2006, and that was used to try and create a market for the gangs to supply the heroin to the baby boomers. Because, as you know, there's an ongoing goal to kill off people before they hit retirement and to destroy marriages and break things up, etc. So that happened, and, you know, he played Feel Like I Do.
Well, certainly if you're going to be...
Over.
Greg, can you hear me? It's Lenny.
Yep.
Yep. Certainly, the gangs are a part of the ruling elite's method of operating and preparing the police state, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And the gangs are actually...
And so, like, gangs, police states are run on heroin and opium.
Yeah, the gangs are actually a polarized part of the knighthood.
Right.
There's so many of the knights are pedophiles, and so many of the gang members are pedophile victims. Now, if you go into prison, the most common trait of someone in prison is schizophrenia. And the most common trait of a gang member is schizophrenia and pedophilia. And pedophilia creates schizophrenia. So you've got all these gang members acting overly tough and rebelling against establishment. And they're pedophile victims, and some of them are pedophile victims from knighthoods or people who have since been promoted to knighthoods. And then they are used to supply the drugs, and they are getting a lot of their drugs from the police. And when there's a tinny house, you know, a house that sells drugs that the police don't control, they'll raid that tinny house and then take those drugs and put it into a tinny house that they do control. And then the people who have just been raided go to the other tinny houses and buy some drugs and do tests on them to see if it has their signature on them. And the drug dealers who have been raided by the police are finding that the police are then on selling their own drugs.
Okay, Greg, what about the users? What about the users? What's their background? Where are they from? White collar?
In New Zealand, we've got a...
White collar? Blue collar?
Oh, yeah. Even judges. Judges and lawyers, big drug users. Police, huge drug users. Huge. Often, when you get pulled over by police at night, they're on tea. They're on methamphetamines. And the police introduced methamphetamines. So they came into the country, well, the biggest establishment of methamphetamines in New Zealand was by the Papakura police in 1992, and that came under the protection of the Serious Fraud Office.
The politicians use a lot of drugs?
I know that some...
Who are the users? Who are the real users?
Oh, the media.
The media?
The real users of drugs, the biggest users of drugs in New Zealand are media people.
Media people.
Yeah, like we have, in order to control the media, in order to control everyone, you've got to have shame on them. And one way to do that is to have them using drugs and have that recorded. Another way is to have them fronting as heterosexuals, but to actually be sexual deviants. So in New Zealand, we've actually got no heterosexual males in the media.
Shut down the media.
And if there is a... What's that?
Shut down the media. They're all gay.
Yeah.
We have to shut down the media.
They are. They're a bunch of ass bandits.
Yeah. Well, look at Robert McNeil was standing beside Lee Harvey Oswald in Dealey Plaza and lied and got a TV show to keep himself quiet, to cover up the truth. So all of us, what happens is Dan Rather was in Dealey Plaza. He covered up the truth. He covered up the Zapruder film. He became CBS News anchorman. Everybody who got into the media were all guys who were liars and covered up the truth.
Yeah,
of course, the sickness of the media, the sickness of the media was reflected by the fact that the anchorman that Dan Rather replaced, his name was Cronkite. And our good doctor, our expert historian in counter propaganda science, Dr. Stefan Grossman will tell you. Go ahead, Stefan.
Yeah. Hi, Greg. Just for the English speakers, the name Cronkite, Walter Cronkite, in German, it means sickness. Cronkite is sickness.
And the media had a sickness starting in the 60s, right, Stefan?
Oh, yeah. It's chronic by now.
Chronic sickness.
Chronic Cronkite.
I mean, they brainwashed them with the fluoride. That was docile the mind. That was developed in Germany. They docile their mind and prepared them with that elixir so that they could then hit them with the TV, and bang, they put them into brainwashed state.
Yep. That's how it's done. In New Zealand, the state's TV interviewer is a guy called Paul Holmes, and he's been doing it since 1989. And he came into TV with the biggest history of failures of any New Zealander. He's 5'3" tall with black curly hair, and he thinks he's 6'10". And he tried to become a hero star in Hollywood, and he mortgaged his parents' home to do so, and he completely failed, got kicked out of Hollywood, and he ended up selling oranges off a cart in Melbourne, and he was bankrupt. And then the mafia took the orange card off him because he couldn't pay his rent on that. And he came back to New Zealand and got into 2ZB, which is a pretty sort of backward radio station down in Wellington. And he was a total failure at that. And then he moved up to Auckland, and he met a woman called Millie Elder. And, a woman called Henny Elder. And Henny was in a lesbian relationship with a woman in England. And they had hired an artist in Paris, not a very good artist, and paid him £3,000 to donate sperm. And with that sperm, they had a child together. And he moved to the island of Lesbos in Greece, where he was a waiter. Henny Elder and her lesbian lover came back to New Zealand. And Henny got set up with Paul Holmes, the failure radio announcer. And then Paul was going to Alcoholics Anonymous in City in Cottle Park in Auckland City, and he told a story to some judges and borrowed $850,000, which went over Kevin Ryan's desk. He's a lawyer here. He was the chief fundraiser in the Southern Hemisphere for the IRA. He paid $850,000 to Henny's lesbian lover to get rid of her and make claims on the daughter, Millie. And then Paul Holmes was then very soon elevated into television, which made him a prominent radio announcer. And then he got into more alcoholism and basically every drug known to man, and was a complete swinger. Anything goes in the bedroom, sex with men and women and group sex. And he was the face of morality and the face of government talk show. Over.
Can I ask a question?
Go ahead.
Yeah.
You mentioned one time that these ideologies, they are only for the surface. What really counts is agendas. Is there an agenda either to create such deviant personalities, for example, by influencing them at childhood age, or how is the selection process made? Do they grow them on a farm? Let me put the question in a very pointed way.
You look for potential in the person. And potential is the difference between what they are and what they want to be. So if you want someone who's controllable, you look for someone who has failed at everything and wants to achieve everything. And then you can put them in positions where they can achieve everything. And you keep them in shameful states, like either involved in group sex, homosexual sex, or in Paul Holmes' case, supplying his stepdaughter Millie with methamphetamine. And then they are completely controllable, and then you pay them exorbitant sums, like Paul Holmes has been paid over $10 million over the years. And he is basically regarded as New Zealand's worst father. And Henny Elder and Paul Holmes were married, and they employed a woman called Deborah Hamilton as his call girl. And then Paul left his wife, Henny, for his call girl. And then the stepdaughter, Millie, started to get into tea from age 14, and Paul Holmes was one of her suppliers. Now, Milielder sold Paul Holmes' Cartier watch and pawned it off for P, and then the P dealers found out that the watch was a fake. Paul Holmes kicked Millie out of the house for stealing his Cartier watch, and then Millie moved in with Paul Holmes' P dealer. And then somehow Paul Holmes' P dealer was trumped up on kidnapping charges, which left his methamphetamine stash at home unguarded. Millie and her mates got into all the P, and then the police came in and raided Millie and all her mates on Paul Holmes' P dealer's stash. All the while, Paul Holmes is on TV presenting talkback radio and talkback on TV, and is writes articles in the paper on how wonderful Helen Clark is, when we all know that she's a KGB agent and a former Tavistock St. Petersburg prostitute, as is the Speaker of the House, Margaret Wilson. So when you get down to the nitty-gritty of it, there's no room in here for any form of ideology. It's all based on immorality and the control that one world order people have over the media. So the media has not said anything against the Iraq war, anything against the Afghan war, and has said nothing about the Osama bin Laden walking down the rocky slopes, never aging, as being fakes. Rather, what the New Zealand media does in actual case is it shows the same footage of Osama bin Laden walking down the rocky slope, saying that it's new footage and that it is being guaranteed as genuine. So what's happened now is that New Zealanders have absolutely no belief at all in the news. So the news is just straight propaganda, and New Zealanders are looking for the news elsewhere. And when the truth comes out, it's generally suppressed. And what Helen Clark has tried to do through the Electoral Finance Bill is make any news that is actually true illegal. So we're in a fascist news state, and Helen Clark is essentially the Hitler of the South Pacific.
We're back into those days of the age of the Vatican when science must conform with what they say is true when we know it's false. And the movements of the heavenly bodies, they don't want us to know the truth about that, and they don't want us to know the truth about the universe and all the other constants and laws. They've changed the laws and the constants to bamboozle the people.
Yeah. Well, if you look at the CIA formula for gravity, for instance, it's completely at odds with the scientific community's formula for gravity.
Yeah. Yeah, all the laws and all the laws of science and natural science have all been altered, and capital L laws, phony laws, are created and mass marketed as truth.
Yeah.
It's a pure, and it's a mind control, brainwashing, mass mind control. Right, Herr Grossman?
Yes, and it's a very organized form of a... treason. Greg, you're basically saying this is a manifest form of an espionage operation to take over a country.
Yeah, absolutely. I think everyone in New Zealand now acknowledges that New Zealand has been taken over by feminists and communists, and 9 out of 10 communist manifesto tenants are actually active and law in New Zealand. And that Helen Clark and Margaret Wilson are both KGB agents. Helen Clark's code name is IE, which is pronounced E, which means island, because they're always coded in Arabic. And Margaret Wilson's code name is Pi, which is short Pirati, which is Arabic for pirate, because she's got one leg. The other leg is a prosthetic leg. And Margaret Wilson has an ongoing deal with Colin James, and Colin James is a... has a very large column in the Herald, and he writes total drivel, and he can never actually make a statement. By the end of his article, he's always undone anything he said, and that's because he's shagging the Speaker of the House.
The chair of Peter jets around the world. The chair of Peter continues to jet around the world at high speed. The new Rome is rising.
So, Greg,
there was a very funny incident.
We're having problems hearing you at this end. They're starting to block your signal and weaken it. Go ahead. Try and strengthen it up.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
It's starting to fade. How about you,
Stefan?
Are you hearing him clearly? Stefan?
It's almost gone. It's almost gone here at my end.
Yeah. They've hammered you.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, but it's rough, right, Stefan?
Yep. Greg, the waves are coming. Greg?
Well, shall I come closer? Try another line.
Oh, there you go. Now you're done. That's better.
Okay. There was a very funny incident between the Herald reporter Colin James and Margaret Wilson, who was then the Attorney General. They were at a swamp quango in the Wairakei Geothermal Power Station in February, March 2002. And they were having sex in the hotel room, and the SIS guards were nearby. And Margaret Wilson's prosthetic leg came off and hit a mirror and exploded. And then Colin James was stunned, and he was sitting on the floor, and Margaret Wilson was jumping up and down on one leg when the SIS burst in the door.
Oh.
They thought it was an explosion.
Wow.
Mayhem.
Wow, that's something else. Did anybody throw an ashtray at a Secret Service agent's head?
Now, that would be a different
one of the funniest
situations.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying, you know.
Washington, the District of Clones. I found, by the way, what the DC stands for.
District of Clones.
Yeah. Do you have clones in New Zealand?
We got a lot over here.
Say again?
A lot of clones.
Do you have clones in New Zealand?
I don't know, actually. Don't know. The New Zealand is very important in relation to Antarctica. Christchurch in the South Island is the leaping point to Antarctica.
Well, they've cloned.
And as Spain was the leaping point to the new continent, America, New Zealand is the leaping point to the new continent, Antarctica. So since 1950, the intelligence name for New Zealand has been New Spain.
Yeah, but Stefan, don't you think that what we're talking about here is just as the food is genetically modified, that the people that we see in front of us on TV have also been genetically modified already?
Well, there are many reports to that effect.
Like, wouldn't you say that Blair and Bush are all of an age to be genetically modified, have been modified?
Blair, I don't know. Greg has a story about Blair. He's somehow related to the British royal family, an illegitimate royal. So that would be his leash, so to say, if I may use that term. The George W. Bush who sits in the White House, it is reported by insiders that he is a clone and that there is no authentic George W. Bush. And you see that wire on his back that sticks out through the suits, etc., etc.
Yeah, they made the switch.
It's very strange.
Yeah, they made the switch, and it was very, very sneaky cute the way they did it. And just like they used the Rehnquist, it was interesting the way, if you guys remember at the inaugural, Bush's hand went up and blocked Rehnquist's face from the TV, and the double was inserted.
That would have been a double, not necessarily a clone.
Yeah, it was a double.
Mm-hmm.
But the doubles are used, and also are the clones. And of course, now they've got a clone here. District of Clones.
Yep. So, Greg, in New Zealand, who is behind it? We can say New World Order, But you seem to have a specific lead there on Mr. Putin being involved in New Zealand operations. Is he involved in Helen Clark?
Yeah, well, I'll give you some basis on Helen Clark's KGB training. She was, the Cold War was a joint venture exercise between Russia and America, and it was controlled by Israel. So the Americans had first spotted Helen Clark as someone of interest, and they handed over her to the KGB on the 7th of June 1967. And then Helen Clark used to fly up to Stockholm to listen to feminist lectures and eventually give feminist lectures. And then she would go to Strindberg Plays, and where she was met by the KGB, and then she would be flown on a 95-minute flight across to St. Petersburg, where she underwent her Tavistock training, which included every form of shame filmed and recorded, which were under control. And I had an astrologer around the house yesterday, and he was checking out the dates on some of my stories against Helen Clark's birth date, and he was saying that very definitely there was a complete switch in her brain-mind personality around 1967-68. Now, Helen Clark came back to New Zealand and then became a political studies lecturer. And then Vladimir Putin came to New Zealand, to Wellington, the capital. He lived here from 1982. Originally, he was a fisheries inspector, and then he was a cultural attaché.
We're losing you a bit.
And he had two body doubles, and collectively they were known as Alexander Putin, Alexia Putin, and Valenti Putin. And they all looked obviously very similar. And Vladimir Putin was Alexei Putin. And his job was to ensure that the Russian submarines and the Russian fishing trawlers could launch a nuclear strike on the Wairakei Defense Mission, which was the pretty much the only nuclear strike site in New Zealand from Russia. And the Wairakei Geothermal Power Station had been built by the British Atomic Energy Commission as a facility to produce most, if not all, of the heavy water for hydrogen bombs for the Western world.
Right.
On the certificate of title, it actually says owned by the British Atomic Energy Commission.
Right.
Can you guys hear me?
We can hear you.
Yes.
They're starting.
Yes.
They don't want a lot of this out, so they're starting to try and waver you, but keep going.
Okay. I'll speak right into the speaker. Fine.
Sounds good.
So Helen Clark and Margaret Wilson were meeting Vladimir Putin at Wharf Number 3 in Wellington at the wee hours of the morning, and they had another go-between who kept a diary, and she ended up becoming a leading protester, and she her diary was actually stolen by her father in 1982, who then took it to his mate, who was political party head in his area, and that was how we found out about it. So what was happening was
lost him a bit, Stefan. Can you
and organizing the you okay there?
Stefan, can you hear him okay?
No, it's really going down. The quality is going down.
Yeah, it's gone down a lot.
The sound quality, not the quality of the content.
It's coming in here. That's the key point. So we're recording it clearly over here.
Oh, perfect. That's
yeah,
good.
Yeah. Greg, go ahead. Just speak up because they do hit you when you say it.
What was happening was in America extending the Cold War, America and Russia had a joint venture agreement with their fishing trawlers, that wherever an American fishing trawler went, the Russian fishing trawlers had to follow. So the American fishing trawlers had speakers dangling under their trawlers, which were playing submarine sounds of American nuclear submarines. And then the Russian fishing trawlers followed that, and then the Russian nuclear-armed submarines followed that, and then the American nuclear-armed submarines followed that. So you had these four craft trailing each other.
Right.
and they were doing, they came out to New Zealand, and they were doing figure eights around New Zealand, going through the Cook Strait. And the Russian fishing trawlers were dropping markers in the ocean so that the Russian submarines could get an accurate location for a nuclear strike on America. And at the time of the Cold War from 1980 to 86, New Zealand and Wellington was actually the hot spot of the Cold War. What Helen Clark was doing was finding all of the sexual indiscretions on New Zealand political figures and handing them over to Vladimir Putin so that Vladimir Putin could then gain control of New Zealand's parliament via sexual indiscretions. And one of our political figures who eventually became Prime Minister, David Longhi, was having ongoing relationships with transvestites. And it was David Longhi who gave the famous speech at Oxford University saying, "I can smell the uranium on your breath." So in that way, Vladimir Putin got complete control, or some control, a degree of control, over the New Zealand Parliament. Over.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. And those are people who are still around and in power today.
What I find is really interesting is that Helen Clark and Vladimir Putin had sex, and they were working together, both trying to launch a nuclear strike on New Zealand, and then Helen Clark and Vladimir Putin got into power as leaders of their country within 1 month of each other. It's November, December 1999.
Uh-huh.
So all of the strange social clockwork in New Zealand is created in Russia.
And planned for other countries outside of New Zealand.
Well, what Russia's been doing is gaining control of New Zealand so that New Zealand can be used as a gateway for Antarctica. And Israel has been taking over the South Island, and China has been taking over the North Island. And there's at least 1,500 Israeli agents in the South Island, and there are over 2,000 Chinese spies in the North Island alone. And in very late December 2006, between about the 29th of December 2006, a Chinese spy in New Zealand broke the ranks and presented the New Zealand government with a list of 2,000 names of Chinese spies in New Zealand. And instead of Helen Clark acting on it, she had him jailed in Mount Eden Prison in the green room, which is a oval padded room, and had him strapped to the floor for 3 days without food or water or anywhere to defecate.
Mm-hmm.
So that's up there with rendition. Hence, especially the Rothschilds consider Helen Clark to be the Hitler of the South Pacific. They had a hand in training her.
You have several pictures of her in your book, of course, but the one that sticks in my mind especially is she's unfortunately for her, but for some reason she looks very strange, very unfeminine, I might say.
Yeah, well, Helen Clark is androgen insensitivity grade 5, which means that she was conceived as a male, did not rejected androgen, but did not reject it fully, and was conceived with male characteristics. So she has, she's got a face that actually looks like Hitler, and she's got a lot of male characteristics, deep voice, and she's former prostitute, now a lesbian. Prolific lesbian.
She's a guinea pig from an. She's a guinea pig from an experiment. She's a guinea pig from
an.
She's a guinea pig from an experiment, a genetic experiment, right?
Yeah.
Well, it sounds to me a bit like that, and it looks to me a bit like that.
An alien.
No, I don't know, but
a genetic experiment gone wrong, a Mengele, something that comes out of the wrong end of a Mengele lab.
Well, we've actually got people marching down Queen Street with signs saying, quote, Helen Clark is Adolf Hitler, end quote.
Uh-huh.
And we've got lawyers writing two-part letters which are read over the radio saying, this is why Helen Clark is Adolf Hitler. And a lot of people in New Zealand actually think that she is Adolf Hitler, either Hitler of the South Pacific or the reincarnation of Adolf Hitler. She's the most unpopular woman in New Zealand's history. She's absolutely hated. Even politicians in Parliament absolutely hate her. She's a double-agent Prime Minister. She's done everything she can to destroy New Zealand.
Yes.
It's absolutely unrecognizable. Unrecognizable. It's so bad that since she's been Prime Minister from December 1999, 1 million people have permanently left New Zealand. 25% of the population have permanently left.
Well, is she a
voluntarily.
She's probably a child of the fold, the same cult that Bush came from, and she's the engineer that intends to wreck the train, just like Bush is.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, part of the idea of politics being so obviously bad all around the world, especially in New Zealand and America, is that they're trying to engineer a tax revolt. And they'll use the tax revolt as a means to wipe out a large portion of the population. And then we won't have taxes. What we'll have is a higher interest rate, and everything will be controlled from the central bank.
Yeah. Central bank for central mind control.
Yeah, same thing.
Central bank for a central mind control. Big Brother, 1984.
Yeah,
Orwell was great. Stefan, how are things at the Ministry of Truth?
Well, it looks good. I think we've presented the book. Greg, why don't you tell our listeners how they can get your new book? What do they do? Do you have a website? Say the title again, too.
Yeah, the title of the book is New Zealand, the Black Man's Guide. It's 300 pages. It's got about 250 photos in it. It's the non-ideological version of New Zealand. It is New Zealand with the scenery removed. And it is available at www.greghallett.com. Or you can send a check to FNZ Inc., PO Box 109-624, Newmarket, Auckland, New Zealand. She's a ripper!
Terrific, Greg. Well, thanks so much for coming on and giving us this great briefing, and we look forward to having you back again real soon.
Well, that was a good one.
Thanks for having me.
Greg, thanks very much. That was very informative and eye-opening.
Well, Stefan, Dr. Grossman, it's really, that was true. What a report from Greg Hallett. A terrific,
I mean, that was shocking to me. It's known about the USA, but they've always been that way. And you see, other countries, they apparently had a system that worked that was more or less independent. It's being taken over. It's in the clutches of this spy apparatus. That's devastating.
Yeah, and I mean, it's obvious that what's happening around the world is that we're watching the rise of the last world empire, as was prophesied by Daniel. As prophesied by Daniel, the last world empire. The man's given five world empires, big, big world empires. Babylon, right? Persia, Greco-Macedonia, Rome, and then the ten toes of Nebuchadnezzar's dream. Nebuchadnezzar's dream, the ten toes of the statue, the iron and miry clay. And certainly the 10 kings of the earth are gathering, doing their darndest to get control of the nations so that they can gather the armies of the world together in one spot at the Valley of Armageddon.
Seems to be coming closer.
Yeah, the nations of the world are under the spell and control of the kings of the earth, and they're using that power of the governments to then control the militaries, and they're moving to gather all these militaries together to do battle at one spot. So everybody, the Russians, the Americans, the Indians, the Pakistanis, the Japanese, the Chinese, all the armies of all mankind are all coming together under the same influence to just do war in one spot. And we're going to watch it play out. Right, Stefan?
We're going to watch it. We're going to report about it.
Yeah, we're going to give you a backstage, gondola view backstage at plot headquarters. Just as we used to do with the great Sherman Skolnick.
Yep. Well, it will just have to play out. It's not going to be the end of time. That's not what's predicted. I don't believe that's what will happen.
Time doesn't come to an end. Only this age, this era comes to an end.
Mm-hmm.
Time doesn't come to an end.
And what upheaval. It really, what we heard, it really puts a big question mark behind what democracy is. In the USA, we've been told it's a democracy, but especially what Greg Hallett has found, what Eric Phelps has found,
They're all Roman colonies. That's what we found. That's what Skolnick found. It's what McLuhan found. Right? It's what Phelps found. These are all Roman colonies.
Yeah, but it does seem that at one point, these revolutions, 1776, 1783, then the French Revolution, well, it had Napoleon, but after that, they had only a weak king. And republics.
The Protestant Reformation changed the course of history. As the papacy and the chair of Peter went underground in order to undo and try and put everything back into Pandora's box, put the consciousness of man back into Pandora's box. The freedom of speech is what we're at war with mostly here. We're at war with
the people who want
evil people who want back our consciousness. They want the freedom of consciousness, freedom of speech, freedom to think. They want that taken back from you.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're at war with here. I mean, that is really what's happening. That's the big war. The evil forces that are trying to stop man from thinking and being aware, which, as the preface to the Bible said, don't be traduced, quote unquote, 1611 King James Version, the preface to the Bible says, don't be traduced by popish persons who want to keep us in darkness and chains, unquote. So if you're looking for the truth, go to the Bible and forget anything any man tells you or anything written by a man, and just go right to the preface of your Bible. That's the Word of God. And that's where truth lies, at the ministry of truth. That's where truth lies. So, right, Stefan? And as Christ said, keep your eye on the signs of the times. Watch and pray always.
That's a good one. Watch and pray always.
Yeah, watch and pray always, Christ said.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And keep up the faith.
Yeah. But there's
particularly what they want to undermine.
Well, I think that satire is an important part of counter-propaganda science. Satire.
You mean scientific satire?
It was satire in all its forms. The ability to be satirical. The only way to tell the truth today is to be satirical, because it's a form of expression of ideas that is the only way.
Because reality is satirical. Yeah. To be truthful, you have to be satirical as well.
That's right. So you must, in order to communicate it, just be satirical and laugh at it, because that's really all you can do, because none of us are going to change this from happening. And this is all part of a divine purpose, divine nature that is being played out. I'm not going to try and change it, but go with it and understand what God's about. So I think that that's the thing people have to start to get their mind around and look at the human race as the way it's been as an organism, and it's not been it hasn't survived very well without its creator, and now it's pretty stiff-necked. And so how many plagues will mankind take before he surrenders? Because that's what all these guys are doing, like the Nazis and all these evil is fighting God. They're fighting God, and that's what Nimrod did. He tried to build a tower higher than God could raise the water. Totally futile. And so as a result, man's always been involved in futile operations. Whether you're a baker or a plumber or a professor at university or a surfboarder or a musician or a banker or a lawyer, doctor or a housewife, you're all just trying to build a tower higher than God can raise the water. So it's all futile. All our efforts are all futile. And it's because we're trying to fight against God. And mankind's going to the point where he's just continuing to fight. And at some point, God just grabs him by the collar and straightens him out, which in this case will be a very, very heavy set of plagues the way I see it. Hopefully people turn around and wake up soon. I think they're so mesmerized with the fluoride and the fashion magazines and the lotterios. I mean, let's face it, the devil has a unique ability to distract people's attention from the truth.
And he is a deceiver.
He's a master deceiver. You study 9/11, and you'll see the devil's handy mind, his mind, how it works.
Let me just sneak in that. At my website, www.galarize.com, I put something up about 9/11. There was a discussion with a submitter. Were the Twin Towers nuked? And it's interesting. It's in three parts. I put seven little video clips up there reporting things. Anybody who's interested, that's a key question. There's so much disinformation out. No, the whole do match of Boeing. No, they were not nuked. No, that flash of lightning is just normal. Too many disinformants out there. Some of them are physicists.
Well, let's just nail this 9/11 thing right now. In real simple common sense terms, you can crash a plane into a building, but you can't fly a plane pristine into a building. Okay?
Doesn't work.
Something's going on. There's definitely not solid objects hitting solid objects. And think of all the unique weaponry and ultimate weaponry they have at their disposal to make it look like a solid object hit a solid object, when in fact it didn't. It was just an illusion, a magic trick. And because the people are dumbed down with the fluoride and the nonsense and the magazine and all the media, the whole media, they're just brainwashed by the media, right, Stefan?
Yep.
They're easily fooled by these magic shows, and now they've told you we've been attacked by foreigners, when in fact it was a high wire act we did ourselves.
By students.
Yeah.
By students.
So the second thing is, A, you never had any solid object hit a solid object, because you can crash a plane up against a building, but you can't fly it into a building pristine. The second thing is, there's no black boxes found. No black boxes found. And we find a pristine passport, which we're told, which Barbara Bush tells us, Marvin was in the area at the time of the blast. Hello? I mean, two and two is not three, it's four.
But the brother was in Florida in a school reading a story of a pet goat, and then they told him, and he just sat there.
Yeah, he just sat
there. Somebody turned him off.
They bamboozled NORAD with all sorts of backdoor on the softwares. And they ran a Blackwater operation.
What a coincidence that they had these 10 or so military drills scheduled and running just on that very same morning.
Yeah, where was Blackwater on 9/11? Where was George Bush on November 20th? Where was George Bush on November 22nd, 63?
He was on Dealey Plaza.
He was the mob boss at Dealey Plaza for the CIA. Powerful guy. He could kill the President of the United States at high noon in Dallas within 40 yards of the sheriff's desk.
Mm-hmm.
And ever since then, we've had to put up with Daddy Bush's, all of Daddy Bush's henchmen. Clinton, Obama, McCain.
It's the gargoyles.
Yeah, the gargoyles.
Gargoyles.
Daddy Bush's gargoyles. Condoleezza Rice. They're all his gargoyles.
They're creeping out of their homes.
Daddy Bush's gargoyles in the White House. And that's what they are. They are gargoyles. You've pinned it perfectly, Stefan.
Ah, Lenny. What's going to happen next?
Yeah, I really think that the intelligentsia of the human race has reached an important point. I think it can look back now with a perspective beyond itself and see that it made a lot of big mistakes and it should repent and grab the great immortal future that was offered to it. There's no doubt history from the time of Christ to today, history is all set in stone. It's all was created and done at the cross. At the cross, we now had access open to God the Father, which we didn't have before Christ's coming. And that's why you had in the synagogue at the time of his death, the shroud in the synagogue was split in two, rent in two. So the curtain between you and God was now cut in two, and you could get direct contact with God thanks to Christ and his sacrifice. So we're redeemed by his death, but we're saved by his life. And from that moment on, from the moment he died, that was it. Everything's been cast in stone, preparing for his second coming. All of it. So you're just on a Ferris wheel. You're on a roller coaster, and you're just hanging on. And it's his roller coaster. And I guess he wants you to get streamlined and help him out. You know, get in touch with reality is what I think Christ wants for all human beings at the end time. Wake up to reality. And try and convince human beings that they shouldn't have to take such punishment before they give up and say, okay, we'll let God rule the show because we've made an absolute mess of it. And that's what's going to happen in his second coming. He comes and sets up his kingdom, and he rules. And everybody hands over control to him, and there's no death anymore, and there's no hospitals. Hospitals, you know, are a part of museum pieces, and life changes. So That's what I think and we're watching before our eyes. It's going to be very interesting to watch. Certainly Deuteronomy and Leviticus about how it's going to get hot here. Terror. God says he's going to send terror, and he's going to send a lot of hot air. It's going to get hot. Global warming. Sign of God's coming. The hot breath of prophecy, Stefan. As Christ's word comes, prophecy becomes history right at the nanosecond.
Yep, we're watching it unfold.
Yeah. But mankind is being, ordinary man or slaves being used to help the kings of the planet muster the nations so they can get the military of the nations, control the military. They got to get control of the military through the nations. So they do that. They get control of the military, and then they put the nations in concentration camps. And they send the troops down to the Armageddon. Right? That's what they're out to do.
That's especially what the Americans, not the Americans, but this haywire government, the regime, the one-party regime, they...
Well, it's not only the Americans, it's the British Americans. It's the Angles, the Saxons, and the Jutes. It's the Angles, Saxons, and Jutes who went over to that island there. Angles,
yep,
Saxons,
the Americans,
Jutes. That's part of America. America's the...
Typical for such a free country, they go the whole way. They do it particularly extremely and visibly.
Well, the name Israel in the Bible was given to Britain and America, not to the Jews. It's the Union Jack. Jack stands for Jacob. Jacob's name was changed to Israel. So the nation that bears Israel's name is not the Jews, but the British. Britain is Joseph's son Ephraim. Manasseh is America. So they're the ones who got the blessing, and that's Israel. So all the prophecies in Micah and Habakkuk and Isaiah and Jeremiah and Ezekiel, where it says Israel, it doesn't mean Israel, i.e. what we call Israel today in the Middle East. It means Israel, Britain, America, and it means Jacob. It's Jacob's trouble, Jeremiah 30. It's the 12 sons and the nations that descend from the 12 sons. So this has been a great time, Stefan. We've really gone like an hour and 23. I think we'll leave it, eh?
Oh, let's do it. It's late here too.
We should have mentioned off the top. We had Greg coming in from
Auckland, New Zealand.
Hang on, Stefan. What I want to do is I want to do the beginning of the show. We didn't do it. Let's do 1 minute beginning where we just talk about how we're hooking up, okay?
Okay.
Welcome back to Cloak and Dagger. I'm your host, Lenny Bloom. Once again, we're here to scrape the bullshit off the truth and to expose the state secrets, the ruling elite. The ruling elite hope you don't learn. And joining me on the line is my co-host, Dr. Stefan Grossman. Coming to us from Frankfurt, Germany. It's a pleasure and an honor to have you bring your treasury of wisdom back here to Cloak and Dagger.
Well, hi, Lenny. Hi, everybody. It's nice to be back. I think we'll have some interesting things to talk about here in this show.
Yes, Stefan, we've had Greg Hallett on here before, and He's, of course, the author of the Hitler Was a British Agent book. And certainly that was a big dot of connection for all historians and people involved as historians in the study of counter-propaganda science. His book was certainly a big, important lesson and state secret that was revealed. And he's been going on with this, continuing. And we're going to have him on tonight talking from New Zealand on our internet line. And Stefan, it's, thank God, it's nice and clear between you and me, Frankfurt and Toronto. But when we get him on, we often have had problems because the NSA and the ruling elite don't want us to get a lot of the truth from him.
Mm-hmm. Well, what did they have one time? They put a Spanish-speaking woman crossing over his line and things like that.
Yes. Yeah, it does interfere. So we can, for those of you listening to the show, Stefan and I are just going to start our conversation off with Greg Hallett, author of Hitler Was a British Agent, and he's going to fill us in on things going on in New Zealand. So get your seatbelt tightened fast. The owners of the system have gone to sleep. It's after midnight. We can now come out and play, and we're going to come out and play for sure tonight. Right, Stefan?
Yep, we'll sure do that. Play, watch, and laugh.
Yeah. Be satirical and enjoy this briefing and update. Shop talk, a lot of good shop talk from Greg Hallett here. And Stefan and I and Greg are going to get into some new shop talk tonight. And certainly the owners of the system are going to want to start fade it out as quickly as possible. And we'll be prepared for that as well. So, Stefan, let's start off with bring in Greg Hallett.
Okay, wonderful. Greg? Lenny, we got that. We got that at the beginning.
Okay, we're off. Yeah, we're off now.
Okay.
So we just have to do our ending. So here I'm going to do the ending, okay?
Okay.
I'm going to do the ending. Well, Stefan, that briefing from Greg Hallett has just been tremendous. Once again, he starts to get into and expose the big secrets. And, of course, that's what we're doing here at Cloak and Dagger, exposing the big secrets, using an understanding of shop talk from plot headquarters and a form of being satirical in order to show people what's really happening backstage in the global theater.
Yeah, we had a good look at that. I found it quite shocking, to tell you.
Yeah, and as we, you know, the general public there in New Zealand as well as here, the general public has been taught that history happens by accident. But however, as here in Toronto and in Frankfurt and also in New Zealand, the upper echelons know that history is planned, and the internet is giving us a great opportunity to discuss these things with our fellow explorers of the truth. And Stefan, it's an honor and a pleasure, as Sherman Skolnick, our former co-host, always said. What did Sherman always say, Stefan?
He, first of all, he had one thing. It was the liars and whores of the oil-soaked, spy-riddled monopoly press.
Yeah, exactly.
That is one thing. And then when he'd sign off of one of the shows, it would come out, to hell with the Queen of England.
Yeah, to hell with the Queen of England. So read it yourself instead of asking the government why, because that will cause the propaganda to die. Good night, Dr. Grossman.
Oh, good night, Dr. Bloom. Lenny, that was nice. Thank you. Thanks, everybody, for listening.